Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and let's just wade right into electoral politics. Barack Obama, by the way, has still not, to the best of my knowledge, and I signed up for the email, announced his vice presidential candidate. Still a lot of debate, a lot of speculation. Same with John McCain. Apparently his candidacy or his campaign has been contacting secretaries of state around the United States, asking if it is legal in their state for a vice presidential candidate to not be a member of the party on whose ticket he's appearing, which would mean Joe Lieberman. Very interesting stuff. Anyhow, Joseph Farah is with us right now. Joseph is the founder and CEO of WorldNet Daily, worldnetdaily.com. He's also the author of a new book, None of the Above, Why 2008 is the Year to Cast the Ultimate Protest Vote, a book highly praised on the front and back covers by Michael Savage and Jerome Corsi, which I guess gives us some clues. Joseph, welcome.
Hey, Tom. Good to be with you, my friend.
Well, glad to have you here. You know, I've actually spent a fair amount of time with your book, and the first third of it, more or less, is a pretty tough, attack and a lot of innuendo against Barack Obama, you know, that, and it turns out Barack Obama was in fact mentored by a very active member of the Communist Party USA while living in Hawaii and Chicago, et cetera. But then you also go after John McCain, you know, chapter four, why McCain is unacceptable and
right.
You get
and Tom, you like the fact that I actually tell people because I tend to speak to more Republican audiences, and certainly that, you know, WorldNet Daily readers are more Republican leaning, the millions of readers we have there. And I actually tell them that we'll be better off America will be better off in the long term with Barack Obama winning this election. So we have some areas of agreement between us.
Well, actually, perhaps. I think the profound area of disagreement is that you're suggesting in this book that our two-party system has brought us two very corrupted candidates, and it's brought us a corrupted Congress, and it just kind of sucks, and so let's just check out of it. And I'm suggesting that we need to do two things to fix that. I don't broadly disagree with your thesis. I'm suggesting that there are two things that we should do to fix this, which I didn't find in your book. And one is what over 350 communities in the United States, including the largest, the city of San Francisco, have done, which is institute instant runoff voting. So all, or fusion voting as they have in New York State, so that all political parties can participate, number one. And number two is, guys on your side who are people of good conscience and truly believe what they're saying, as opposed to the corporate shills, and guys on my side of true conscience who really believe what they're saying, as opposed to the corporate shills, need to get in and take over the damn parties.
I'm with you 100%. In fact, I was thinking about introducing this conversation, if you gave me the chance, to say that I believe, you know, in the Democratic Party and the progressive side of things, there are people like you who profoundly believe in the principles they espouse, and there are people who don't. And I will tell you quite honestly that I think Barack Obama is one of the people who doesn't. I think he is one of those guys who is about empowering himself. Can I give you an example of that?
Sure.
That is in the news today. It's just breaking today, so it's not warmed over stuff from my book. But have you heard about George Obama?
No.
George Obama is Barack's youngest brother who lives in Kenya in absolute abject poverty, a dollar a day. He was found by the London Telegraph.
So he would be his half-brother.
His half-brother, right. For me, I wouldn't make any distinction between a half-brother, a full brother, or an adopted brother, or any other kind of brother.
Brother kind of assumes it's somebody that you knew, somebody you grew up with. His father left when he was two. Went back to Kenya. If he had other children,
well, let me ask you a question, Tom.
I'm not sure that they would have
an
influence on Barack Obama.
If you had a half brother living in abject poverty in another country, would you make any effort to help him?
Well, the interesting corollary here, Joseph, is Cindy McCain's two siblings, which Cindy and John have actually actively been denying even exist. And one of them had to come out in the media day before yesterday.
But you're having a conversation with a guy who says, don't vote for John McCain. So if we could put John McCain aside for a moment and talk about Barack Obama and say, hey, Tom, if you had a brother living in abject poverty in a foreign country, would you make any effort to help him? I know the answer is yes, Tom, so don't be afraid to say it.
Yeah, well, I just don't know the circumstances that you're talking about, Joseph.
Come on. Okay, let's make it the best of all circumstances for Barack Obama. Let's pretend you've never met this guy, but he's biologically related to you. And you know that he's living in abject poverty and a dollar a day in the slums of Kenya. Would you make any effort to help him?
I don't know. You would, Tom.
I'm
not running for president of the United States, Joseph. It may well be that this is the kind of thing that would be a huge political trap for Barack Obama. Who knows who this guy is? Who knows what he's involved in? Who knows what he's doing?
You.
Obama has completely separated himself from his father and his father's family ever since he was two. It's a whole different thing. And no, it doesn't matter what I would do.
Well,
and this isn't about me, Joseph.
Exactly.
You know, should I be asking you, you know, if your wife had a half sister and her father had cut him off from the inheritance, and your wife was telling Newsweek magazine that the person didn't exist, and the person came out and said, no, I do exist. You know, I mean, these kind of hypotheticals are nonsense, Joseph, frankly.
Well, I don't think so, because I have faith in Tom Hartman that if you were in that situation, you would help your brother.
No, you're not going to use me to smear Barack Obama. I'm sorry. Ain't going to happen. You know, this is the point, though. I mean, your book, None of the Above, Why 2008 is the Year to Cast the Ultimate Protest Vote. This is the classic Republican. Paul Weyrich. You know who Paul Weyrich is?
Weyrich.
Okay.
I even know how to pronounce his name.
Yeah, I'm assuming you know the guy.
Sure.
Okay. And he's been around the corner around the circle for a long time. He's still an advisor to George W. Bush. He started out even before Reagan. I mean, wasn't he in the RNC or the Republican Party back with Nixon?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. So he's been around forever. Here's Paul Weyrich in 1980 speaking to a group of Republican activists in a Christian church.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
So, you know, that said, I'm not surprised to see a book that says don't vote.
Well, I think our theses are a little bit different between what Weyrich was saying and what I'm saying. You know, because I'm talking to everybody. I'm hoping to convince many
but with a book that's got Michael Savage on the front cover and Jerome Corsi on the back cover, I'm guessing.
I would have put you there if you had had the good foresight to recommend my book.
Yeah. Actually, if your book were consistent with Weyrich's strategy, you should have Democrats on the front and back.
Hey, you're a student of the Founding Fathers, Tom. I know you are. And you know that the founding of this country and for many years thereafter, we had a very small voting population. It wasn't everybody. It was property owners. It was men.
Not true right across the board. Actually, the Constitution doesn't address any of those issues. There was a huge debate in the Constitutional Convention. Alexander Hamilton and James Madison were of the opinion that it should be property owners. There were others who were strongly of the opinion that it should not be property owners, and they didn't put that into the Constitution. There were, of the original 12 or 13 states, there were about half of them that had laws that restricted voting to property owners or to men.
Well,
women were voting in Delaware. African Americans were voting in Delaware and Massachusetts in the 1790s.
That's great. I'm all for it. But I would ask you this. Do you think that people who who get money from the government should be permitted to vote in federal elections?
Did you get a public education, Joe, Joseph?
I did, and I regret
it. Okay, so you got money from the government. Do you think you should be denied voting?
When I think about how advanced I would be had I been able to, pass by that public education. But
would you like to call the fire department and the police department and tell them you guys are socialist institutions, I just don't want your services anymore?
Well, fortunately today, the police department and the fire department are not yet under the jurisdiction of the federal government, and hopefully, I know you respect the Constitution, never will be, but so I think that's a little bit of a red herring. But what I'm talking
about... Wait a minute, no, these are socialist organizations. They work for local governments. You're going to put a sign out in front of your house that says, hey, if there's a fire department, please keep on going?
See, what has happened...
And the schools are not run by the federal government either, by the way.
They get a lot of money from the federal government, unfortunately.
By the way, let me, in direct answer to your question, I'd say absolutely. Anybody who's getting money from the federal government, in fact, it's more important that they vote because they have to be holding the federal government accountable.
Okay, well, I guess we'll agree to disagree on that one. I just think that, the federal money is part of the problem.
I think we have to acknowledge that the federal government is us, and we have to take it back.
I wish it was us.
Well, to a large extent, it's not. It's corporate America's, and that's
right.
Why we need to take it back.
That's right. I'm with you on that.
Okay, Joseph Farah, the editor of WorldNetDaily.com, his new book, None of the Above, Why 2008 is the Year to Cast the Ultimate Protest Vote. And, Joe, I hope to see you in support of instant runoff voting out there one of these days soon. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Take control, gotta vote, yeah, you know how it goes. But y'all looking for the cars and clothes, and this other man hope is that y'all don't vote, cause even he know majority rules, keep majority of the minority fooled. Your vote really does matter, dude, and that attitude, government's loving it, so if you're looking for your retribution, be part of the problem or the solution. Really, all due respect, kid, voting is free, last time I checked it. Look at he crooked and he connected, you don't vote. Getting reelected. See, I'ma tell him in the style of a rhyme. We can change the world with one vote at a time. Come on, if you don't vote, don't complain. Then how you expect the world gonna change? And everybody got something to say.
21 minutes past the hour. Here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, your radio support group for We the People. Now, here again, this is. Here we had Joe Farah saying, basically, don't vote, none of the above, right? And, this is, in my opinion, why. The Drum Major Institute released this brilliant study, a survey of the middle class and public policy. 78% of the middle class wants to expand the student, the SCHIP program, the state health insurance program, children's health insurance program, SCHIP. Man, the Democrats have to come up with better names for these programs. It's like, when you're walking through that cow patio over there, Ralph, don't step in any of them S-chips. Come on, guys, get with the program. The Republicans come up with things like the Patriot Act, the Help America Vote Act, the Keep America Strong Act. And you guys come up with S-chip and LIHEAP, the low-income heating program and the state children's health insurance. S-chip? LIHEAP? Anyway, when asked, do you believe that the United States should have a national health insurance plan available to all Americans at an affordable cost? 75% of all Americans said yes, and here's how it breaks it down. 57% of Republicans say yes, which might be a good reason to tell Republicans not to vote in this election. 91% of Democrats, of course, say yes. When asked, should employers be required to provide paid family and medical leave? 71% of Americans said yes. Tell me this is far left stuff again. 71% of Americans. Yet I guarantee you on virtually any talking head show, except possibly Keith Olbermann, and congratulations, Rachel Maddow, my friend and colleague, it was great sharing some time with Rachel in Seattle this last weekend, and now she has her own show on MSNBC. She will be following Keith Olbermann. If you haven't seen the announcement all over the blogosphere, and of course on Keith's show last night, this is a show you want to be sure and put on your TiVo. And I'm sure Rachel's just going to do an absolutely wonderful job. But anyhow, with the exception of those two shows, if you watch any of the corporate television out there, particularly the big three network corporate television, they will tell you that people who think that we should have a national health insurance plan are the fringe left. People who think that employers should be required to provide paid family and medical, that's the fringe left. Individuals who entered the U.S. illegally as children should be able to apply for legal residency and go to college or serve in the military if they have no credit. It's a fringe left. Allow bankruptcy judges to change mortgage payments to prevent foreclosure. That's a fringe left. In every case, more than half of all Republicans surveyed support these things. And over, well, respectively, 91%, 84%, 68%, 71% of all Democrats support them. The total for national health care, over 75% of Americans, yes. Requiring employers for paid family and medical leave, 71% of Americans, yes. Allow people who are children, the children of illegal immigrants, to go to college, serve in the military, become U.S. citizens, 61% of Americans, yes. Allow bankruptcy judges to change mortgage payments to prevent foreclosure, 62% of Americans, yes. This is not the far left. This is all Americans. So the far right, which holds the opposite of all these positions, is saying now to both Democrats and Republicans, don't vote! Don't vote, because we figured out you guys, you're all socialists now. By the way, yesterday at the end of the show, we had a guy call in from Vietnam Veterans Against JohnMcCain.com and went off on, McCain isn't a war hero. And I got into the act with him and went into a rant about, how we have this, how I'm not going to pat John McCain on the head for his war service. I'd spent some time over at that site. I've dug a little deeper into this. This group apparently has sprung out of the old Missing in Action group, which was mostly a bunch of right-wing guys who have been going after, both McCain and many left-wingers. And I'm just, the more I look into this, the stranger it gets, and I'm just not going to attack John McCain for being a POW or for what he might have or might not have done when he was a POW. I'm just not going to go there. So I wanted to officially change my position from yesterday. Also, Michelle Bernard. When I had Michelle Bernard on, I quoted, I think, 10 or 15% of German electricity coming from solar. We've been looking for the stats on this. The best stats I can find, in 2004, the Seattle Times reported 10%. We have found figures as high as 14% of German electricity is coming from solar. We're trying to get somebody from the German embassy on to talk about this. And, I'll tell you about the Pelican right after the break. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be picking up your calls as well.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Call him now at 866-303-2270.
New Harry and Louise ad featuring the actual Harry and Louise from the original Harry and Louise ad. Remember the old Harry and Louise ads that they ran against attacking Hillary Clinton's health care plan in 83? Well, there's a new Harry and Louise ad out. Here it is. Harry and Louise, older and a little more middle age and, you know, whatnot, sitting in the kitchen talking, and here's the spot.
Healthcare costs are up again. Small companies are being forced to cut their plans.
Tell me about it. You know, Lisa's husband just found out he has cancer.
But he's covered, right?
No, he just joined a startup and he can't afford a plan.
Too many people are falling through the cracks.
Whoever the next president is, healthcare should be at the top of his agenda. Bring everyone to the table and make it happen.
Interesting. Now, I have a sneaky feeling there's a gotcha in there somewhere, you know, who's doing this, who's, you know, what I think is happening is that organizations, because this was put together by a coalition of healthcare groups, and the AARP is running these ads saying, get John McCain and Barack Obama to talk about healthcare. And, of course, the AARP is, you know, one of the nation's front group for one of the nation's largest health insurance companies. So much like the NRA is a front group for the lobbying arm for the weapons industry. So we'll see. Oh, I wanted to mention the penguin or the pelican. My son Justin was on this boat, the Pelican, and in fact got during Hurricane Stan. He says he got a little seasick. And what were they doing? He was working his master's degree in oceanography, and they were out there measuring oxygen levels in the Gulf of Mexico, and now they've taken the statistics that Justin and his crewmates pulled together along with others, and the story, CNN talks about these dead zones, these huge dead zones that are all over the world, and six of the nine stations revealed much oxygen-deprived hypoxic water compared to the normal reading of 6 milligrams per liter, et cetera, and talk about this. So it's strange and terrible stuff, frankly, going on in the world. And not a good thing. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Chris in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how you doing today, sir?
Just great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Good, good. It's a good day. I live up here in Wisconsin, and as I was telling your screen call, I was telling them that I agree with part of your health care S-chip, you know, with the children, but I don't think I should have to pay for everybody. You know, if you can't afford health care, then, you know, you got to do without. I mean, I don't.
Let me ask you a question, Chris. Let me ask you a question. Do you have health insurance?
No, I don't.
Do you think at any point in your life you may want to have health insurance?
Well, absolutely. When I do have a family and that comes up, but I you know, like I said, I feel that I shouldn't have to pay.
No, I understand that. You're on the record. Let me just, I'd like to walk you through a couple things, and this isn't a setup for a gotcha, and I'm not going to try to make a fool out of you, okay? Let's just follow along. At some point, you want to have health insurance. You understand that the whole principle of insurance is to spread the risk over as large a number of people as possible so that when any one individual gets hit with something catastrophic, it doesn't bring down the insurance company, right? In other words, an insurance company that only has 10 customers is an insurance company that probably won't last very long, because if one of those 10 people gets really sick, it'll put the company out of business. Are we on the same page? Okay. Now, also, as a consumer of insurance, you know, I have an insurance policy. You're going to have one someday. As consumers of insurance, wouldn't we want a health insurance company, one that we know is going to be healthy at least as long as we're alive so that they can always pay our bills? And number two is operating with the greatest efficiency. In other words, the smallest number of people have their fingers in the pot, and the largest percentage of the money is actually going to pay for health care. Does that make sense?
Right.
Okay. Yep. The for-profit health insurance companies in this country, on average, have to skim about 20 to 30% of the money that comes into them as premiums off the top and pay it out to CEOs making millions, in the case of United Healthcare, over $1 billion, pay it off in the form of dividends to stockholders who really generally require at least a 7 to 10% return on investment or they won't buy the stock of the company, have to pay for marketing and advertising to compete with other companies, have to pay for the gold faucets and the corporate jets, all that stuff. That all costs on average about 24% right off the top, which means that you and I are paying 24% more in premiums. Plus, when you've got a whole bunch of small companies competing, some of the smaller companies are at risk of going out of business, as many of them have over the last couple of decades. Why not distribute the risk in the classic form of an insurance company? I'm not talking about a government program. I'm talking about an insurance company. Why not distribute the risk over every single American? all of us, have all of us be in that pool and have it run by an agency that gets no profit out of it whatsoever, so its maximum operating costs are not the 25% of a typical for-profit insurance company, but instead are 2%. Doesn't that make sense?
No, it makes sense, but my question I'll shoot back to you is if you don't take it on as a person, what I'm trying to say is if you don't take it on as an individual, you know, what's going to stop the people from overeating? What's going to stop the people from having unprotected sex, getting these diseases? You know, with the healthcare system now, you are trying to concur that if these people are.
No, actually, I'd say with the healthcare.
No,
I agree with you, Chris. I agree with your premise. I absolutely do. And with the healthcare system we have right now, those health insurance companies simply say to those people, oh, you're obese, you have diabetes, that's a lifelong condition, we're not going to insure you. Tough luck, you're out of luck. And people die as a result of it. Instead, if, you know, when I was in Denmark, where everybody is insured by the government, everybody has a policy through the government, it's single-payer national health care, 30% of the people who live in Copenhagen bicycle to work. 30%. Because everybody is in the pool, even people who are young and healthy and who, you know, would say, hey, I don't want to pay into the pool until I actually need it. Because everybody is in the pool, everybody has an incentive to encourage everybody else to behave in a way that's healthy. Isn't that
right.
A good thing? You'd have peer pressure working for you.
Right. And if you do it that way, then I would agree to a point. I just think if you take the incentive out of being healthy, the incentive of having it handed to you, then I think, couldn't you do it this way too? If you took it off our taxes and cut it off and said, okay, well, you said 24%, so I'll just use that. What if you could take 24% off your taxes for you to get your health care? I think that would also be a way for people, because for like myself, I don't need health care. I probably should have it, but I take that money and put it elsewhere because that's my choice, and I want to have it as my choice instead of being told you are going to be on this insurance with everybody, you know,
I break my leg, I still got to make my payments. I know, but Chris, see, that makes you a freeloader in a way, and at the same time, it also makes you one of the people who isn't part of the giant incentive, you know, all of us working to encourage other people not to smoke, for example. You're not one of them because you're not part of the system. You have no skin in that game, in the national healthcare system game. And by the way, that 24%, 25% average overhead cost of all the health insurance companies, if you take all the health insurance premiums that are paid to for-profit companies right now in the United States, and you take the 24% of that out, in other words, if Medicare instead, which operates at a 2% overhead, if Medicare was providing health care to everybody in the United States, not running the hospitals, not hiring the doctors, just writing the checks, just like a health insurance company does, if Medicare was doing that, that 24% savings would be enough to insure you at no cost, to insure every single American, because you're already paying part of the cost of health care for everybody in the form of whatever deductions are taken from your paychecks, in the form of taxes that are going to state-run hospitals for emergency room care, for people who are showing up for a $600 emergency room visit, for an eardrum infection that should have been seen by a doctor but they don't have health insurance. You're already paying for it, and we would radically reduce all of those costs, plus everybody would have health insurance. All we have to do is put the health insurance companies out of business, which is going to be one hell of a difficult job.
Right.
Because
right,
they got billions
of
dollars. Okay, thanks a lot for the call, Chris.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. You just have to dig down into the details of these things. You know, anyhow, Ann in Walnut Creek. Ann, we got a minute before the break. You wanted to defend AARP.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it's a lot more complicated than what you were saying. Anyway, you were kind of coming out with garbled stuff. I'm sure you didn't mean to say that AARP is somehow a front for weapons manufacturers, which is actually what you said.
No, I'm sorry. I said the NRA is the front group for the weapons lobby.
Okay, well, you said AARP, but it's okay.
I misspoke.
Anyway, I'm on Medicare, and I completely agree with you, and it's just idiotic that we cannot make people understand. But you know something? Every single person I've spoken to in the medical establishment, including people who work for United Healthcare, which is the health insurance company that AARP is the front for.
Right, and the health insurance company that paid their CEO $1.78 billion.
Every single one of these people wants, all the doctors, all the nurses, all the insurance, the health insurance company people want us to have national health care, and they probably all love to go work for solar engineering companies.
No, these are the mainstream positions of America, Ann, absolutely right. And this is how bizarre it gets, that the corporate media, which is, again, go to theyrule.net and look at how all of these companies are interlocked by having the same people on their boards of directors. The corporate media, they want to keep the profit in health insurance.
An historic time for America. Live, on-site coverage of the Democratic National Convention on Air America and AirAmerica.com. Our time is now.
A better way of making it seem clean. We built an electronic voting machine, and then we sold these suckers nationwide. But we're the only ones who know what's on the inside. You push the buttons and our voting machine keeps track. We made it so it's very easy to hack. Call for a recount, it will probably fail, but our machines don't leave no paper trail. The billionaires don't want you to vote this year. We'll send you a message that's loud and clear, that the votes can't be counted in your community. Why even register? Don't waste your energy. Don't go to the polls on election day, cause we bought the election and it better go our way. And on election night we'll sit back and glow. The billionaires don't want you to vote.
Don't vote.
If you're happy with George Bush in charge,
don't vote.
If you want to keep
the billionaires for Bush.
Do you really want to rock the boat?
With their eternal message. Hey, we get mail, you know.
You know it's nice when the postman has a letter in a sack for you.
This is from Marilyn. She says, Tom, I love your show. Now listening every day on podcast. Got my iPod from Small Dog Electronics. I bought organic wine from ecowine.com and patronized several other advertisers. On to the pigeons. If they're robots, why do they taste so good? I live in France. We roast and eat them here in France, and they're absolutely our favorite birds to eat. Expensive, though. She adds, health insurance. I'm now in the process of getting worldwide coverage so that I can get a carte de séjour to stay in France longer than 3 months. Guess what? It costs about half of the policy I now have with Primera Blue Cross. Now, to the question of why do those pigeons that you're eating in France taste so good? They're not pigeons. They don't bring them to you on the plate with all the feathers intact and the head and the beak so you can identify them, do they? No, they bring them to you all dressed out like a little tiny chicken. They're actually doves or squabs or something like that. But no, pigeons, they're robots on the planet Xenu that are here to spy on us. That's why whenever there's a meeting of world leaders anywhere in the world, you see lots and lots of pigeons. And it's why you never see dead pigeons and you never see baby pigeons. They are friggin' robots. Judy in Mahwah, New Jersey. Hey, Judy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just wanted to say, when I hear people like that young man you were talking to, my head wants to explode.
Well, he came around.
Pardon?
By the end of the conversation, I think he came around to our way of looking at this.
I hope so, but it's that whole punitive, like, you chose to be sick. You
right.
chose to do this. You chose to have a disease. You know, when he finds out he gets hit by a car, he may change his tune.
Yeah.
And it just...
Or that he, when if he finds out he has genetic heart disease or, you know, God forbid or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, you have weight. Yeah, well, you know, that's only part of the picture. People who are overweight, most of them live their whole lives on diets. They don't work as well as other people's. I mean, I had a body that never met a pound it didn't like, and I had a 95-pound roommate who ate like a truck driver.
Yeah, no, it's
you know,
for very few people who are overweight sat out one day and said, you know, I think I'll get fat. Come on,
exactly.
You know.
Exactly. And we thank you for talking him down and being so rational with him, because it's just we have to stop thinking about this as you don't deserve health care. You
yeah.
chose to be sick.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you're absolutely right about the risk pool. I mean,
yeah.
I paid Blue Cross for 10 years and never got a penny out of them. They just made a lot of money on me.
Well, and they also paid for a lot of other people's health care, and that's the point of the risk pool. Judy, thank you very much for the call. Your point is very well taken. John in Ottawa, Canada. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
I'm a big listener of yours. I also work for Sirius Canada, so it's an added bonus, I guess.
Well, thank you for listening to us on Sirius Satellite Radio.
That's right.
What's up?
Well, just calling a little bit about a comments about the healthcare and what I've heard, you know, traveling in the U.S. from people, and it's sort of the same Republican kind of ideas. They tell me, you know, your system's broken. They tell us, you know, you guys are overpaying taxes. You know, there's no choice. You know, you deserve to be sick, or you know, I'm not getting sick. I remember being in Denver a couple weeks ago, and the guy told me there, the taxi driver says, I don't plan on getting sick, and I don't need insurance, and you Canadians are communists, you know. So it's sort of funny how they really like to turn it to make it look as if a liberal is a dirty word, or we're like,
yeah.
All red.
So how do you, John, you're a Canadian, you live in Canada. How do you like your socialized, and it's really not a socialized healthcare system. The government doesn't actually run the hospitals and the doctor's clinics, do they? I think you have more of a single payer system there, or is it a little bit of both?
It's a single payer system, and the way it works too is, you know, you get sick, you go to any clinic you want. There are problems in the system. I'm not going to say it's the most perfect utopian system out there, but you know what? It works a hell of a lot better than your system, and we don't leave people out to die in the streets. So,
yeah.
If you look at it that way, yeah, for sure, it's great. And, you know, if you go to school or any other public institution too, they have insurance policies to cover your Medicare and stuff. And, for example, you go to university here for $50 included in your tuition fees, you have a university insurance policy. What that does is it covers your dental and it covers 80% of your medical, for example, the pills you would pay.
Mm-hmm.
So while OHIP would cover most things, that's what we call our Ontario health insurance plan here.
Right.
OHIP will cover your medical bills and whatnot. You know, the university or your school plan will cover your medical, like your pills, your birth control, everything like that a person would need. That's covered 80% as well. And I mean, $50 a year is a premium for that is pretty darn cheap. You
$50 a year?
Yeah, $50 for the school year if you're a university student.
Yeah.
For example, you'll have your 80% of your pills, $500 for your dental. That's while you're in school.
See, this is what happens if you spread the risk over every single student in the country.
Yeah, and you know what? Our viewpoint on this, I think, is that healthcare is the right of all people. Like, it's not something that can be an entrepreneurial thing where, you know, it has to be for profit. Like, in America, like, the whole idea of capitalism, that it has to be in every facet of life, how you have to even privatize now your army. You know, there's more contractors in Iraq, for example, than actual military personnel, where everything has a price tag on it. We don't have that view in Canada, and actually we don't have that view, I would say, in most of the industrialized world when you look at other countries.
Well, this is what the Wrecking Crew, John, has done to the United States. The Republicans, starting with Reagan, came in with the specific agenda not just to shrink government, but to destroy it. To destroy it not because they dislike the functions of government, not because they don't think that anybody should be providing health care or police or fire or education, but because they want to make a buck off it. And so they, you know, the Thomas Franks talks about this in his new book, The Wrecking Crew. John, thanks so much for the call. Thanks for listening to us on Sirius there in Canada. They came in to ruin this nation. And they have done so to a large extent. I mean, look at what happened with Katrina. Look at the Iraq War. Look at the debt that they've driven us into. It's The Wrecking Crew.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Is Tom Hartman.
Okay, so I laid it out where most of America is at. And I want to get an opinion on this thing. I do a reality check here. Terry Jeffrey is with us. He's the editor-in-chief of CNS News, cnsnews.com. And actually, there's a bunch of things I'd like to talk with you about, Terry. First of all, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom.
Great to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me.
Before I get into these issues of national health insurance and card check and paid family leave and stuff like that, the Georgian-Russian conflict, I am hearing so many different stories out of this thing. In Russia, the news media, the main story seems to be, and in fact, explicitly is, I can tell you for a fact, explicitly is that Saakashvili 3 weeks after he met with Karl Rove, when Karl Rove was supposed to be testifying before Congress. Instead, he was with Saakashvili in Yalta at the fourth annual Yalta meeting. And that 3 weeks after that, he attacks South Ossetia, and that this was done to further the campaign of John McCain. And on the United States side, on our side, there's no mention that I've been able to find, or very little mention of the fact that the first bombs were dropped at midnight in Svengali, in the capital city of South Ossetia, by the Georgians. And it's being portrayed as Russian aggression. And obviously, I think Russia has hyper overreacted to this thing. But to what extent are you perceiving this as a partisan issue?
I don't think it's a partisan issue at all. I mean, did I understand you correctly that there's Russian press that are saying Karl Rove somehow instigated the Georgians to take action in South Ossetia?
Yeah, Rove and Randy Shuneman, who took $800,000 from Saakashvili, who is John McCain's chief policy advisor.
I have to say, Tom, I mean, to me that just sounds like a black helicopter theory. I mean, it would have been a suicidal thing for Saakashvili to do. I mean,
right, which is why the speculation is that he was encouraged to do it. This is why he came on TV and said, "Okay, John McCain, support me now." Why would he do that if he hadn't given the guy $800,000 and he expected something for it?
Because anybody who's followed the career of John McCain knows that John McCain is a person who, apart from my foreign policy views, mine are quite different, is a Republican who wants to promote democracy around the world and has a very Wilsonian understanding of America's role in the world. And favors things like Georgia being assumed into NATO. And this is something John McCain has promoted his entire life in politics.
Right, but how is Georgia being brought into NATO and weapons being put in Poland any different from the old Soviet Union putting missiles in Cuba?
Well, I will tell you, I'm not an advocate of Georgia being allowed into NATO. And I think it is a mistake. I think, if the United States were ever actually to get involved in a military conflict with Russia over Georgia, it would not be supported by the American people because there is not a vital interest of the United States.
Actually, I think it would be if there was enough jingoism to sell it, and that's what I've been hearing from the McCain campaign.
Well, you know what? Look, I may agree with you to this extent. I first of all, let me just make clear, I do not in any way believe that John McCain or Karl Rove advocated any action on Georgia's part to provoke Russia. But I would agree with you on this, that it's possible that sort of a war boosterism in the United States could inspire rash acts by our political leadership that could get us involved in a conflict that we do not need to be involved in, and that over the midterm the American people might not support, even though they might not support it in the short term.
Right.
And I think that would be a mistake. I think this is the sort of thing everybody needs to step back, look at it very carefully, and examine just what our interests are and what we can do to help the Georgian people if, in fact, they need help, and we can do something short of getting ourselves involved in a military.
Right, and let's do it in a way that also builds our relationship with Russia, which is getting very paranoid about us, and all the saber-rattling and George Bush saying, no, we don't need any more disarmament. He pulled the nuclear test ban and the arms control treaties in his first year. I mean, let's move along. The Drum Major Institute has released a pretty thorough study of middle-class Americans, and the majority of both Republicans and Democrats agree that employees should be allowed to be represented by a union when a majority of coworkers sign cards requesting representation. Yet there is this huge multimillion-dollar campaign, and the Republican Party staking its future on this thing. In our area here in Oregon, we've got the Republican Gordon Smith's campaign running these ads against Jeff Merkley, his Democratic opponent, saying, you know, he doesn't want you to have privacy in your vote. But 68% of Americans want their representative to vote for the Employee Free Choice Act. Let me just toss a couple of these out, and you can pick whichever ones you want. Hedge fund managers, by and large, are taking their income as dividends and as capital gains. They're paying a maximum 15% income tax rate. 68% of Americans, including more than 50% of Republicans, think that they should pay the same income tax rate as working Americans. The State Children's Health Insurance Program, the brilliantly named S-CHIP program. Hey, don't step in those S-CHIPs over there, Ralph, as you walk through that cow patty. To cover children from lower and middle income families. 78% of Americans overall think that this should be supported. National Health Insurance Plan, available to all Americans at an affordable cost. 91% of Democrats, 57% of Republicans, a total of 75% of Americans. Require employers to provide paid family and medical leave. 84% of Democrats, 63% of Republicans, a total of 71% of all Americans. What we're finding over and over again is that the policies that are characterized by the corporate media in this country and by, you know, many of the commentators on your side of CNSNews.com, Terry Jeffrey, as far-left positions are the positions of the mainstream middle of America.
Well, if that's the case, that's too bad.
I'd say it's always been the case. You know, Dwight Eisenhower was in favor of most of these things.
First of all, Tom, I would not change my position if 99% of the people in the country were on the other side. I don't care. I mean, the question is what's right and what's wrong and what's the appropriate policy. On the specific thing, secret ballots for union guys. If 68% of the people in America said I couldn't have a secret ballot when I vote for president in November, that doesn't give them the right to take away my secret ballot. And I think the same.
You know, we didn't even have secret ballots in the United States until just before the Civil War.
Well, I think they're a good
in most states.
I think they're a good idea, Tom. I think it's a good idea that someone can go into a ballot booth and vote for who they want to for public office without having their neighbors know. And they don't.
With regard to public office, I don't disagree. We're talking about whether or not to have a union in your workplace.
Right, but I think the same principle applies. I think I have a right in my workplace to secretly vote whether or not I want the union, so I'm not subject to coercion on my vote.
Right.
And I just think that's an American principle, and I think it's unfortunate if most Americans don't believe in it anymore.
But the fact of the matter is, Terry, right now people are subject to coercion on their vote. Employers are holding, this is a billion-dollar-a-year industry. You have to know about this. Employers are bringing in these consultants, these very well-paid consultants who do, you know, PowerPoint presentations and slideshows to employees about how destructive a union will be to them and their organization. I mean, and right across the board, I mean, the statistics clearly show when people get involved in union organizing in companies, they're more likely to lose their jobs.
But Tom, I believe in collective bargaining. I believe that unions have a right to be organized and then to be leveraged for employees against their employers. And I agree with you that if you're an employer in the United States, most likely you're going to try and drive down your labor costs, and one way would be to try to resist unions. And one way might be to move your production overseas. But in the process, but there's also workers who don't want to be members of unions, and they have good reasons for it. And in the process of organizing a union, we should protect the right to people to vote secretly, but we should not diminish their power to use organized labor as a force against big business.
Card check does not mean that I have absolutely no privacy. I mean, I can take that card home and fill it out and mail it in.
Yeah, but why do it that way when you can just have a secret ballot? I mean,
because the secret ballot ends up being run by the employer. There's this whole big program associated with it. It makes it very, very difficult, frankly, for union organizers. It's a huge hassle to bring a union into a workplace right now. What this would say is, if you can get more than half the people to say that you want to have a union, you're going to have a union. I mean, this is we're going back to basically pre 47, you know, pre Taft-Hartley.
Well, let me give you a corporate analogy.
And it worked fine, by the way, in America.
A lot of politicians are talking, Democrats especially, talking about all the oil money that's going to Republican politicians. If you look at it carefully, they're really talking about money that's being given by people who are employed by oil companies. Politicians. But I think it's horrible if an employer tries to pressure an employee to contribute to a political candidate. I think the same thing applies to union people trying to pressure folks to organize a union.
I strongly disagree, because there's a huge difference between an employer and a union. An employer is a kingdom and a union is a democratic institution. Let's continue this conversation, Terry. Stick around. Terry Jeffrey, CNSNews.com, 16 minutes.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Here's another song from GW, that's me, and the Carlisle Group. Here we go, get real close. strangers in the night, exchanging gunfire, liberals so uptight, call me a liar, challenging my war, before my term is through. Something in their eyes is getting scary. Keeping to my plan is getting hairy. Every day it's hard to do the things I do.
Enough, George. Enough.
Justify my
21 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program. The True People's Radio. Terry Jeffrey is with us. He's the editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com. And, Terry, you want to, I closed that last segment with kind of a last word on my behalf, and I give you an opportunity to rebut it if you want. My point was that corporations are kingdoms. They are not democratic institutions. Their employees have no vote in how they are run and what decisions they make and how they spend their money. On the other hand, unions are entirely democratic institutions. Their members vote on everything from their management to their policies. And so I have no problem with unions playing an active role in politics and corporations not.
Well, I would say this. Unions ought to be absolutely democratic institutions. And I would say taking a step away from secret ballots in union organizing is taking a step away from democracy in unions.
But it's also diminishing the number of unions that you're going to have. I mean, if we want to have a maximum, if you're a real advocate of democracy, I would think that you would want as much democracy as possible in the workplace. And if you pass the Employee Free Choice Act and you have card check, you're going to have a lot more unions. You're going to have a lot more democracy in the workplace in America. Why is that a bad thing?
Because in some instances, those unions are going to get into the workplace through coercion and intimidation of workers, because the union organizers will know
then the employees can throw the bums out. Unions are democratic institutions. If you get a majority of employees saying, no, we don't want this union here, it's not there anymore.
No.
That happened right here at the radio station that I work in. You know, last year, some of the guys over on the conservative side got together and said, hey, you know, we shouldn't have a union here. And they voted it out.
I'm for a secret ballot, Tom.
Yeah, well, okay. And I'm for everybody actually having an opportunity to get to the ballot without being, you know, run through you know, hours and hours and hours of indoctrination.
Or having some labor goon try and intimidate him into signing a card that's not secret.
Yeah, labor goons. I mean, that's labor goons. That's such a sad stereotype. No, and there are corporate goons, Terry.
Absolutely.
All right. National health care. 75% of Americans, 57% of Republicans think that we should have national health care, that the insurer should be the insurer with the largest pool, which is we the people, it's our government, and provide insurance at the lowest cost, which is our government, we the people. 57% of Republicans, 91% of Democrats. That's a clear majority. This is a democracy. Shouldn't the majority rule?
No. Because we're not ultimately a republic. We're a constitutional republic.
Okay, this is a republic. In a republican democracy, shouldn't the majority rule?
No, because there are certain things the majority cannot decide to take away my rights. They cannot take away my private property without just compensation and due process. They cannot take away my life. They cannot take away my right to free speech.
So I would assert to you that this is a right to life issue. This is the ultimate right to life issue, because if you're arguing in favor of maintaining the current system, which is denying life-saving health care to millions of Americans because they don't have the economic means to get it, that is an anti-life, that is a pro-death position.
All right, you know, Tom, on a certain level, I agree with you. Let me give you a concrete example of a story came out of California just 2 days ago that goes just through this. California Supreme Court made a decision that said these two doctors at a fertility clinic in San Diego County could not say that their religious principles prevented them from artificially inseminating an unmarried woman. This particular woman happened to be a lesbian, and the court said that they were really discriminating against her as a lesbian. Their claim was they would not artificially inseminate an unmarried woman on, as a matter of religious principle. Well, obviously there are a lot of religions that people adhere to in this country where that is in fact consistent with the moral teachings of that, of the church. Now, if the state can come in and start telling doctors you must do something that violates your conscience, where we don't have a nationalized healthcare system, think what we're going to have when the government controls the entire healthcare system. There will be no freedom of conscience in the healthcare industry, either for doctors or patients.
No, it would be actually, it would be what the majority wants. And what the majority doesn't want, people can get outside of that. If the majority of Americans said, no, we're, we don't want federal dollars used to inseminate lesbians, then it wouldn't happen. My guess is it would happen, because I think the majority of Americans view this as a civil rights issue.
But, Tom, that's not what the California decision said. What the California Supreme Court said is that this particular doctor in San Diego County...
With state money.
Must... No, no. This wasn't state money. This was private money. There's a law. It's called the Jesse Under Something Act. And this, 4 years ago, a similar case under the same
law... Oh, and they were saying it was discrimination based on sexual preference.
They were saying the doctor is compelled to artificially inseminate...
Right, because otherwise he would be discriminating based on sexual preference.
Look, if
you're saying that lesbians shouldn't have a right to have children?
If my religious convictions say I cannot assist in impregnating an unmarried woman,
then get another job.
You must act against your religious principles. That is an act of tyranny, plain and simple.
Well, I guess we'll have to leave our disagreement at that point. I think that the doctor should just get another job if he doesn't like it. Terry Jeffrey, CNSnews.com, the website. Thanks, Terry, for dropping by. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at
866-303-2270. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Morning train commuters in Tokyo were joined on their way to work by an unusual companion on Wednesday. A wild monkey. The monkey climbed to a perch high aboard a departure board, and around 30 policemen surrounded the area and attempted to snare it with a variety of nets as commuters crowded around to snap pictures on their cell phones. That is the 34 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Bob in San Francisco, listening on Green 960. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I expect I'll see Terry Jeffrey and everybody at Fox News Sunday calling Joe Biden the new Al Gore if he's nominated.
In all probability.
Because?
Although Terry's just is a little bit less partisan and more principled than most of them, which is one of the reasons I enjoy having these conversations with him, and I think that people learn from them on both sides.
Well, I think Biden is more used to this off the ticket because of the fact that he is the godfather of the success in Iraq. I really think that they adopted his plan back in 2006 without...
Absolutely they did.
Well, he can't say so as nominee.
Sure he can.
They'll say he invented the internet is what he's alleged.
Oh, no, they won't. I mean, you know, see, this is where Al Gore should have pushed back when they went after him on that, too. I mean, this is the problem. The problem isn't that the Republicans lie or the Republicans mischaracterize or the Republicans paint somebody as A, B, or C. It's that the Democrats don't respond to it. They just roll over and go, oh, well, maybe if I ignore it, it'll go away. It won't go away.
Yeah, well, I'm inoculating him. He can bring it up.
Okay, great. You did a good job, Bob. And Bob is absolutely right. It was 2 years ago that Joe Biden said, if you want to solve the problem in Iraq, essentially partition the country into three areas, a Sunni area, a Shia area, and a Kurdish area. And if we do it, and we do it intentionally, and we do it gently, if we give people money and assistance to buy new housing, if we help them move, if we do it, then it will be done with very little bloodshed. People won't be happy about it, but it'll be done, and there won't be any violence. If we don't do it, it'll get done anyway, and it'll get done at the end of a barrel of a gun, and a lot of people will die. And that's how the Bush administration chose to do it. They went along with ethnic cleansing. Hundreds of thousands of people, at least tens of thousands of people, possibly hundreds of thousands of people, were murdered because they happened to live in the wrong neighborhood. 2.5 million people fled the country because they happened to live in the wrong neighborhood. 2 million people are internally displaced. Iraq has now been ethnically cleansed in the most brutal fashion possible. And that has decreased the violence. And Joe Biden was saying early on, let's do this and do it right. And Bush did it wrong, but he did it. He did it on the cheap. And, you know, yeah. So anyway, I think that that's where we need to get. Ellen in Sunrise, Florida, listening on WINS. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. I wanted to say something about the fellow who called before and was talking about the physician in, I guess, San Diego, mm-hmm. who did not want to perform artificial insemination on a single woman.
Right.
Because she's single, because she's a lesbian, it doesn't really matter. It's kind of like, you know, if you're Jewish and you believe in Jewish principles, you're not going to become a Catholic priest. If you're a Democrat and you believe in what the Democratic Party stands for, you're not going to work for the Republican Party. And the same, if, you know, if you're a physician and you want to become an OBGYN, but you don't want to perform all the duties of an OBGYN, you don't become an OBGYN.
Right. It's really simple. It's the same thing with pharmacists who refuse to give birth control pills to women because it violates their religion. Don't go into pharmacy.
Exactly. Exactly. If you can't, if for whatever reason you can't or you're unwilling to do something that the job calls for, you're taking the wrong job.
My religion forbids me to kill other people. Therefore, I would not apply for a job in a federal prison with a death chamber where I might be the guy required to pull the lever.
Right.
I mean, should we say that, you know, hey, gee, that's a discrimination against people. They, you know, come on. You know, some jobs are just distasteful to people based on their religion or their personal preferences. They shouldn't take those jobs in the first place rather than trying to make the entire nation go in that direction.
Exactly.
Well said, Ellen. Thank you very much for the call. I truly appreciate it. Alan in Seattle. Hey, Alan.
Hey. Hello, Tom. I remember back when I was in junior high school some 30 years ago, we were being taught all about famous African Americans, and we were taught about one specific case that really applies to this denial of medical treatment, and that was where the African American who actually invented the modern method of blood transfusions, who was a doctor, was in an auto crash here in the United States, and it was in the 50s, I believe, 1950s, yep. But he was denied treatment at the nearest hospital, which was a white hospital only, and died on the way to the black hospital.
Right, and he died for lack of blood.
And they said a blood transfusion would have saved his life.
Right, he died for lack of blood. Yes, I remember
right.
that.
Right, but but religion drove so much, and it was the religious in the religion south and the right wing which kept on isolating blacks and whites, and that was a huge portion that was used to justify segregation.
You know, it was so, just up until 20, 30 years ago that the Mormon religion officially held the position that being black was the mark of Cain, and that,
exactly.
and that African Americans couldn't become members of the church. And when, you know, when you and I were kids, apparently, you know, in the 50s and 60s, there were people, and there still are, by the way, but there was more of a mainstream point of view that you'd actually hear on mainstream television, who were asserting that because of religious principles, we should have legal apartheid, we should have legal separation. And, you know, it's...
Well, I was just saying that I agree with that, and I think if you look at the types of radical groups that might support the Republicans versus the ones that report the Democrats, you just look at the KKK, the neo-Nazis, they all support the far right wing, and I don't see that on the left, and I just scares me.
They are the far right wing. I'll tell you, they are. Alan, thanks a lot for the call. Rich in Dallas, Texas, listening on KMNY. Hey, Rich, what's up?
How are you, Tom? Great to have you back on the air here in Dallas. I just
wanted
to give you an update, a quick update on the Bush Presidential Library. The book is here.
Okay.
The revised edition of My Pet Goat has arrived, so the library is ready to open.
Okay.
I love the way you put it a little while ago when you were talking about the way Al Gore was painted and the fact that Gore didn't push back. John Kerry in 2004 against the Swift voters didn't push back, whereas Clinton in 92 did push back. And I'm wondering, do you think Joe Biden, I think Joe Biden is the right guy to push back hard against a lot of these outrageous McCain claims. Do you agree?
I do. The guy who's closest, or the people who are closest to my positions on the issues, are people like Russ Feingold, Barbara Boxer, Dennis Kucinich, Chris Dodd. But I would say that the best candidate, the two best candidates, frankly, in my opinion, to take on George W. Bush are Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden. And I'd say Joe Biden first and Hillary Clinton second, in my personal opinion. And the reason why is they both know how to do they both know how to fight politically.
How do you fight the way someone is, the way McCain is portraying Obama as not American enough? I mean, this guy is the quintessential American success story.
Right, and the way that
broken family, you know, Harvard Law Review, all of it. It astonishes me that they can call him un-American.
Right, and the way you fight that is you identify what they've said, you call them out on it, you call them blasphemers for saying it, you ridicule them and humiliate them. How dare they say something like that? You don't even have to feign outrage. There's real outrage in that, and then you present your side. And those are the things that Republicans always do. They always take that position, and the Democrats need to learn how to do it. It's, you know, just a little political theater. This is not rocket science, guys. Just, you know, here's the question. WWND, what would Newt do? I mean, that's how they have to do it. Rich, thanks a lot for the call. I got to move along. Dave in Detroit. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, hi, Tom. Tom, you know, not many people are really talking about it directly. You'll hear the question, why Obama, why the poll's so tight, but the reality is it's race. I mean, AOL did a poll.
It is not, Dave.
500,000 people 2 weeks ago, and stunningly, 47% said they would not vote for a black man. And, you know, as an American, that's embarrassing. It speaks to low intelligence and hate. And so it will be.
Dave, there's no doubt in my mind that there are some communities in some rural areas where you would get those kind of numbers. But the fact that Barack Obama won in white states, he beat Hillary Clinton, he is polling very, I don't think that race is what's driving this. I acknowledge there are whites who will vote based on race. There are also blacks who will vote based on race and Hispanics and everybody. You know, there's always going to be that subset. But that's not what's driving this. What is driving this, in my opinion, Dave, is that the media has $2 billion at stake. You've got a corporate media machine here that in the last election cycle, $1 billion got dropped into the media for advertising. This year it's probably going to be $2 billion when you add up all the local races and the congressional races as well as the presidential race. $2 billion. If they don't have a horse race from as early as possible until as late as possible, then people tune out. If people tune out, and the ratings on television in particular are instantaneous because they're done digitally now. People don't fill out diaries on television. They monitor your cable box. And so
right. They
know how many people are watching. If people tune out, then their advertising revenue goes through the floor. And they can't charge as much for their ads. They may sell as many, but they can't charge as much. So I believe that every time either one of these candidates, McCain or Obama, starts going up in the polls, you're going to see them hammered down by the corporate media. And every time they start dropping too far in the polls, you're going to see them lifted up by the corporate media.
Interesting.
Yeah, Dave, watch it. You'll see it happening. I've been watching this thing. You know, I'm in the media. I'm telling you, I've been watching this happening for months. And you saw the exact same thing going on with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Every time one or the other of them got a really significant lead, bang, they get knocked down. Every time one of them started falling, they get lifted up because the corporate media wants to make money. That's, of course.
Air America makes history. Live broadcasts and continuing coverage from the DNC in Denver on Air America and AirAmerica.com. Our time is now.
The main fact on the factor is the facts are often wrong. Slander those who can't defend themselves without an ounce of shame. Make everything about himself, and that's how he became.
He's vicious, and that is with a capital D, person who's blinded by ideology.
You might be someone who'll dig it. You might be O'Reilly's kind, especially if you're a bigot with a closed and tiny mind.
Shut up!
If you have no use for reason, then you'll love the way he acts. and he'll tell you what you want to hear, regardless of the facts.
They're not facts.
Bill O'Reilly finally found a home when Fox News came along. A place he could ignore the truth and get the facts all wrong.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. The place where despair is not an option. We have on the line with us today Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service and former Congressman, former Republican Congressman Bob Ney. Ellen and Bob, welcome to the show.
Well, before we talk to about Bob and everything, I just want to say that Bob's very, very close friend and a close friend of mine, Stephanie Tubbs Jones, is on life support, and honestly, we've been hearing that she may not and probably won't be making it.
Stephanie Tubbs Jones is on life support?
Life.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
She had an aneurysm. They found her, and, you know, that's the kind of thing you got to find right away.
Right.
And
right.
I think they didn't find her till the next morning.
We all need to hold her in our prayers. You know, those who are inclined or in visions of light or whatever.
And by the way, every time she saw me in the hall, she said, "How's Bobby? How's Bobby?" So she was a good friend and is a good friend of both of ours.
Of Bob Ney's as well. Thank you, Ellen. Bob Ney, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
I want to ask you about your prosecution and about Iran. I know you speak Farsi and all those kind of things. But first, I wanted to ask you about the Help America Vote Act.
Mm-hmm.
You were one of the main, one of the principal advocates of that.
Mm-hmm.
It was at a time when apparently, according to your staff, you were starting to drink at 7:30 in the morning. I'm curious how involved you were in that, how much you remember of it, and what interests were represented on the inside, because this thing has, in many ways, it seems, it has set the stage for massive voter fraud rather than solving voting problems.
Actually, Tom, I saw something on a blog the other day, and it had a cartoon of me, and it said, Help America Vote Act, HAVA, and it said, have a drink.
Right.
And it actually mentioned the 7:30 thing. At that time, I had an alcohol problem, but it was a little bit more severe after that.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't that I was attending those conferences, intoxicated. And,
yeah.
But as far as the bill itself, I was approached on that bill by a lot of people, both sides of the aisle. And I authored the bill with Congressman Steny Hoyer. And I know there's been a lot of speculation on the bill because of Diebold. Mm-hmm. And,
also ES&S. I mean, you know, Chuck Hagel's old company.
What's that?
Also ES&S, Chuck Hagel's old company, which is actually the largest of the companies that count the votes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Hagel, frankly, I never had any contact with Hagel on the bill.
No, well, he left the company behind when he ran for the Senate.
Oh, I see.
He used to be the president of the company that became ES&S.
Okay. And then I was approached due to the whole, you know, hanging Chad situation. And on that bill, we went over that, you know, basically pretty well line by line, brought in just about every group under the sun involved in that bill, and passed it on a, you know, completely bipartisan basis.
So you're saying that you believed at the time that it was actually the best thing for America?
Yes, I was. And I was approached to do the bill by members, not by, you know, any special interest or anybody
right.
of that
okay.
short.
Well, thank you for that clarification. Pardon me for interrupting you so often here, but we only have about 4 minutes in this segment. I really want to. Well, you were prosecuted by the Bush administration for what Ellen has characterized to me as, one possibly serious crime, one largely irrelevant crime, but mostly something that probably, or a number of things that probably many of members of Congress could be gone after. And she seems to be of the opinion that your prosecution was a political prosecution because you were pushing back on Iran. Can you speak to that, please?
But at the end of the day, I brought a lot of things upon myself. Let me say it right out front, you know, at the
sure.
end of the day. And I did some things that were wrong. But I also believe that part of this was fueled in the sense of the Iran issue. It's been no secret that when I went into prison, I gave permission for the secret meeting I had with Mr. Guleman, who came from Switzerland. He presented a document that was absolutely incredible, where Iran would have recognized Israel and a whole host of other things, would have let our inspectors on their ground. And I sent that to the White House. I'll stand by that today. The White House denies it, but Colin Powell's former assistant admits that came over to the State Department. And the White House wanted no part of it. And I believe that every step of the way, and I think it came more from Cheney's people, that every step of the way that I attempted to deal with Iran, it got pretty harsh back. And so I think part of this, I made the bullets. I gave them the bullets. But I think some of the force was also involved with, Iran and people that would rather see those countries not communicate, no matter, who's head of Iran.
So Iran came to you because you speak Farsi and you're the Iran expert in the House of Representatives.
Ambassador Ghulaman, who was ambassador from Switzerland to Iran, he came to me.
Their representative. In other words, they approached you through their legal representative.
Yes. And I had participated in the meeting in Stockholm.
And they said that they would recognize Israel and that they would allow UN inspectors into their nuclear sites. And you passed that information along to the White House. It fell down the rabbit hole, and immediately you were being prosecuted.
It fell down the rabbit hole. There was a lot of kickback. I know that Ghulaman had terrible problems after that, I think with mainly through Rumsfeld's people and Cheney's people. That's what happened after that agreement.
This so sounds like the Don Siegelman story
and
the Paul Miner story. And if you're not familiar with those two stories, I encourage you to do a little Googling. I think that we have political prisoners in the United States now.
Well, I know that the harshness of the administration, and again, I take culpability. I did some wrong things, but when you get in their path, I think that they've taken blood sport to a new level in this administration.
They've taken blood sport to a new level. What a quote. Congressman Bob Ney, thank you for coming on our program and sharing
you.
So candidly with us.
You'll have him again.
And thank you. Thank you very much, Ellen. And thanks, Ellen, for standing by your friend all these years and for being with us. Ellen Ratner, TalkRadioNews.com, Bob Ney, 57 minutes past the hour. Coming up, what next? Everything You Know Is Wrong, maybe.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the third hour of our program. Stephanie Tubbs Jones, Sean just got a note. Sean Taylor, our executive producer, just got a note from her office, a little news release saying that she is in stable, apparently, but critical condition. Hang on just a second. Oh, here we go. Okay.
She's critical, but she is stabilized, so hopefully that's some good news.
Yeah.
And we should all keep her in our thoughts.
Yeah, very, very close. So thank you, Sean. Thank you. Sometimes you know what you know. Sometimes you don't know what you don't know. Sometimes everything you know is absolutely wrong.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync and think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Yeah, could it be everything you know is wrong about economics? Barely finished high school, but has a PhD in life experience. T.E. Scott worked for Eastern Airlines for 30 years. 32 years, lost his benefits and pension when they went bankrupt. He and his wife then started a living room business, manufacturing dog leads, which he has since sold, and now doing very well, living on a couple hundred acres in rural Indiana. He's written a new book called Crazy Man's Economics. And T.E. Scott, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be with you.
And Crazy Man's, and that's S as in possessive, economics.com is the website for your book. The part of your book I found most fascinating was your dissection of the stock and commodities markets and how this is such a rigged game you call it a minus sum game for anybody who plays. If you win, the brokers are really making out. If you lose, you can't deduct from your taxes the amount that you would have paid on the winning side. That basically, however you play it, if you're playing the stock market, it's like gambling. The house always wins.
You can't win. It's impossible to beat the system as a whole.
Yeah. So,
and people don't understand that. You're led to believe it's an investment, but when you look at the math, it's impossible to beat the system.
Right. So, what's a person to do? Somebody's got some money that they've saved up, or they've been taking out of their paychecks. The options are to buy a bank CD and get 3 or 4%. The real inflation rate is probably running 8 or 10% right now. That's a losing proposition. Another option is to put it into some sort of quote investment, whether it's a commodity, whether it's commodities, you know, gold or oil stocks or actual physical property, land or something else. I mean, how do you get ahead of the system?
Well, if you want me to tell you the truth, there is no way for the masses to make all the kind of money they want to. And I'm not in the investment business, but it don't make any difference. When you buy a commodity, the odds is you're going to lose money. About 95% of people, it don't make any difference what stock you buy in the stock market or a commodity you buy. You got about 5 chances of making any money.
Man.
And so there's no way the masses can make money at the commodity market or the stock market.
Yeah.
Now,
by the way, if I may interrupt you just briefly, CNN is reporting that Stephanie Tubbs Jones has just died. So just update that. I'm sorry, sir. This is unrelated, I realize. But so what's a person to do?
Well, okay. I'm not in the investment, but I'll tell you that you do not want to put your money anywhere that you give up the rights to reclaim it. In other words, always put your money and something is guaranteed, and the best thing you can do is make sure you're debt-free in your own personal life. That's
right.
Your best investment.
Right. So, T.E. Scott, where do you put your money?
Well, okay, there again, where I put my money, if I was talking to the masses, they can't all do what I've done. I started a company and made money at the company,
mm-hmm.
and I bought real estate. But there's not enough real estate to go around for everybody, and everybody can't start a company.
Right.
So if you really want to know what I would tell the American people long term, we need, if you're really thinking about your retirement programs, what we really need, and I don't like to say this because is have a national retirement program, because there's not enough investment if you look at the big picture for everybody to invest from the time you're 18 to your 65 and keep the fees from taking them.
So you're saying, you know, Social Security run by the government?
No. Okay.
What's a national? Social Security is not a retirement program. It's an old age insurance program, and also about a third of the recipients of Social Security are not retired people. They're literally widows, orphans, and disabled people.
Okay.
So you're suggesting we should have, in addition to that, a retirement program?
Well, I'll tell you what. If I wanted to explain it to you, we probably need a segment just for that to explain how it would work, and it would not be like Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a different but if when you try to, what's the problem with the commodity market, the stock markets, they've got us convinced if we invest in it, we're going to make money.
Right.
And the truth about the stock market is you're going to lose money. The masses are going to lose money.
Right. Unless you're at the very top.
And what I'm in the book, The Crazy Man's Economics, what I'm trying to do is expose to the American people that the stock market and commodity market are hidden, you know, and the hidden truth about the stock market, the fallacy of Wall Street.
You refer to the masters. The masters don't share the good deals. They market the bad ones. Who are the masters?
Okay. The reason I use the term masters, there's so many of them, and throughout, ever since 1929, they've been improving the system. So the masters are the people that over time have showed us or figured out how to use psychology and manipulate us out of our money. And so you can't just put any one person, you know?
Yeah. So it's very interesting. T.E. Scott, thanks so much for being with us. The book is Crazy Man's Economics. CrazyMansEconomics.com is the website. Thanks a lot, sir.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you for dropping by. 12 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270. Our number, Lance in Fort Worth, Texas. Hey, Lance, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
First time, long time.
Thank you.
I have two ideas for how Obama can just put McCain away, and it won't even be close. Even if the Bradley or Wilder effect kicked in, he'd still win by double digits.
And that is?
Okay, first one is to get hold of the tapes of John McCain making propaganda video for the Vietnamese. And then when McCain claims, but I did that because I was being tortured. You say, well, wait a minute. You voted for the Military Commissions Act, which means evidence obtained under torture can be used in kangaroo courts against defendants.
Right.
The second thing is, point out that according to McCain's bosom buddies, Bush, Cheney, John Yoo, David Addington, and all these others, McCain wasn't really tortured by the Vietnamese.
He was subject to harsh interrogation.
Or enhanced interrogation.
Enhanced
or
interrogation.
Rough treatment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then no matter which way he answers, he's wrong. If he says that, well, Bush and Cheney and all them don't know what they're talking about, the obvious retort is, well, you supported them.
Right. So this is not taking on John McCain on his service record. This is taking John McCain on his support of the Bush administration's torture policies.
And if he says, well, they're all wrong, they don't know what they're talking about, you say, well, you supported them. And if he says, well, they're right, then you say, well, why are you going around claiming that you were mistreated by the Vietnamese?
Yeah.
If it's
yeah.
good enough for people in Guantanamo, it's good enough for you.
Yeah. The problem with that, Lance, is that it's too subtle an argument, I think, for most Americans.
The problem is Democrats aren't as fiendish as Republicans. Republicans would already be running with this.
Yeah, there you go. You've got that as well. I guarantee you, if John Kerry had been tortured in a prisoner of war camp in Vietnam and had broken and had made propaganda videos for the Vietnamese, that would have been the centerpiece of George W. Bush's campaign in 2004. In fact, they tried to essentially, you know, make they essentially did that. Kevin in Portland. Hey, Kevin, got a minute before the break. What's up?
Hey, Tom. I just want to talk about the Employee Free Choice Act, the idea that this card check is not democratic.
Yeah.
I think we need to start thinking about card check as voter registration, because you really don't get to vote in a democracy until the union is in place. And I think this whole thing about that it needs to be a secret ballot. Well, voter registration isn't a secret ballot. You don't get to vote until you register.
That's an excellent metaphor.
And I think that unions really, whether you're anti-union or pro-union, are the only institution left in this country to practice direct democracy on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, no, I've been saying for a long, long time, for many years, and it's actually a meme that I got from Tom in Minneapolis, that we should, you know, refer to unions at every opportunity as democracy in the workplace, because they are. And they're the only dimension of democracy in the workplace, because the workplace is essentially undemocratic. It's a kingdom. You know, corporations are set up as kingdoms.
Exactly. And what I do when I talk to people about this is I look at employers as the executive branch, unions as the legislative branch, investors and consumers as the judiciary.
Yeah, that's an excellent one. Excellent, Kevin. Thank you very much. Card check is voter registration. I love it. I'm going to use it. I'm going to steal it. Thank you, Kevin. It's a great one. Hopefully, we can propagate it across the rest of the media. Speaking of the rest of the media, Rachel Maddow coming up next, 16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Visit us on the web at hartmanradio.com.
No matter what the cost is, you know getting it ain't hard. You just sign along the dotted line, you can take it home today. Buddy, let me tell you, you're gonna pay and pay and pay, old MasterCard. You mastered me.
Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. She has a doctorate in political science, a background in HIV/AIDS activism and prison reform. She shakes a mean cocktail, drives a bright red pickup, hates Coldplay, loves arguing with conservatives, spends a lot of money on Amtrak tickets, and dresses like a first grader. This is from the bio on RachelMaddow.com. Rachel, welcome.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great, great. It's so nice to hear your voice after having spent part of the weekend with you.
It's great, although I still wish we had drinks in front of us like we did the last time that I saw you.
Indeed, indeed. I'm guessing probably most of our listeners already know, but let me let you make the announcement.
MSNBC has announced that I'm going to have a show, a nightly cable news show, 9 p.m. Eastern, starting the Monday after the political convention. So starting on Monday, September 8th, which is my grandmother's 93rd birthday.
And our daughter's birthday, our youngest daughter's birthday.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
No wonder they picked that day.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to start be 9 to 10 p.m. And Dan Abrams, who has that time slot right now, is going to be doing other things with the network, including a lot of stuff with NBC News, which he is very excited about. And I'll be following Keith Olbermann, which is a great boost to me, just because Keith does so well in the ratings and he's been so personally generous toward me in terms of getting me airtime and pushing for my success, that it's just an incredible opportunity. I'm totally overwhelmed.
Yeah, he's a hero to you know, most folks, I think, in the progressive movement these days, as are you, a heroine. Rachel, I forget which blog it was I was reading this morning. I think maybe it was over at the Daily Kos. There was some discussion about how, you know, Jeff Cohen back. In fact, Jeff was visiting us the weekend before last here in Oregon. Went out and watched our daughter have her birthday gift, which was her and her brother jumped out of an airplane from 10,000 feet. And, you know, we gave it to her in advance because her brother's birthday was 2 weeks ago and hers is coming up. But in any case, Jeff made the comment to me that when he was producing the Donahue show for MSNBC, that the rule was that they always had to have at least one conservative on opposite Donahue, typically two, and two opposite the guest. And if they had a guest on of the gravitas, the liberal gravitas of Michael Moore, they had to have three conservatives on.
Talk about insecure, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
and you know, apparently this was like, you know, some kind of serious written policy of MSNBC or General Electric or NBC or whatever. And the post that I was reading, the blog post, and I'd love to get your thoughts on the reality of this, was that, you know, Keith Olbermann basically coming out as a progressive and then leading to his support of you and bringing you into the fold, as it were. And I realize I'm highly oversimplifying this. You've been on TV, you know, you were there with Tucker Carlson for a year or longer, and you've really paid your dues.
Sure.
And you know, I want to acknowledge that, but Keith, you know, that this thing of Keith having a show that has become overtly progressive, and now you're having a show as a progressive, was not in the business plan. That this kind of came about accidentally.
Right. I mean, it doesn't. To the extent that there is a business plan, I can't speak to it. I mean, we can talk to people who've been in the business, like Cohen, and learn what they saw and what they experienced. But what I've experienced so far is a network that is trying to figure out what this lightning is that they caught in a bottle with
right.
Keith Olbermann. And,
right.
you know, Keith did not start off as a raving progressive in cable news. He grew into that role organically in front of his viewers. And since he has really blossomed in that role and decided to run with it, we've all seen his success, and that success translates quite directly into a lot of money for that network.
That's the bottom line. And when you look at this study that I'm sure you're familiar with, the Drum Major Institute released.
Mm-hmm, of course, yeah.
75% of Americans, 57% of Republicans, 91% of Democrats, 75% of Americans want national, you know, single payer national health care, 71% of Americans want paid medical leaves, you know, just right across the board, all these issues that most of the corporate media refers to as far left issues
yeah.
are actually embraced by somewhere between 60 and 90% of Americans. Is it that MSNBC has just finally figured out that we're all out there?
Well, not to mention the fact that even if you just focus on the very temporal situation we are in right now, thankfully, where George W. Bush is president, three out of every four Americans pretty much hates his guts and has for a very, very, very long time. That three out of four is kind of a suspect number. I mean, that's incredibly high. And so, yeah, there's an audience out there that has feelings about American values, has
right.
feelings about the inheritance of our Constitution, has feelings about what America has to do in order to realize our own potential, redressing our past wrongs, getting rid of crooks in positions of power. There are Americans who have those in great numbers, majority numbers of Americans who have those feelings, who are not hearing that viewpoint reflected in the media. And so can that be monetized? Can that be made into a corporate for-profit thing when all the advertisements are all on this, obviously on the side of the corporate media that wants things to be different? We're going to find out, but they're willing to take a bet on me.
Well, I think we're doing it on radio, too. I mean, we've got some very successful. This show beat Bill O'Reilly almost 2-1 in Los Angeles in the last book. I mean, I beat Limbaugh here in Portland in the last two books. So
when they let us talk, it works, Tom.
That's right. That's right. So Rachel Maddow, her new show, Following Keith Olbermann on MSNBC, rachelmaddow.com. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
Thanks. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Like me and you, I have a silly notion if we want them to be friends, they prefer that we don't torture them. But I'm a liberal,
he's a liberal,
I'm a liberal,
unforgivable,
I'm a liberal,
he's a liberal,
I'm a liberal,
he's your typical liberal,
liberal, liberal, liberal, liberal, liberal, liberal, liberal, liberal,
ha, ha, ha. I'm a liberal,
liberal,
I'm a liberal,
liberal.
I'm a liberal early in the morning, for good reason.
He's a liberal
in every season.
He's a liberal,
though it's treason.
He's a liberal
early in the morning.
Liberal.
Now if we invade a country where lots of people die, the president should have to tell us just exactly why. And if he's caught red-handed, lying flagrantly, I think they should impeach the SOB.
But I'm a liberal.
Indeed.
Welcome back to the No Boring Zone. 35 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program.
Better take off your coat.
Uh-oh. It's a full Monty alert, yep. New Zealand courts. A court in New Zealand has given the green light to the Boobs on Bikes parade. A parade of topless porn stars on motorbikes is going to proceed down the main street of the country's biggest city. Why? Well, they figured it's a democracy. Judge Nicola Mathers said while opponents may find the parade offensive or tasteless, the fact that 80,000 people showed up last year to watch meant that a significant number of people did not agree with the critics. So the Erotica Expo, organized by self-styled porn king Steve Crow, is going to go on, and the Boobs on Bikes parade will happen in Auckland.
Come back here. Stand on his chair.
Uh-oh. Okay, we'll leave it at that. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Flo in Sunrise, Florida, listening on Winds. Hey, Flo.
Tom, it's been a while since I spoke with you on the air, but I'm so glad that Rachel has her show.
Yeah, and she's keeping a radio show, too, by the way. She's going to do both.
She does the Boobs on Bikes. Couldn't they be Republicans on bikes that fall off from a
Yeah, that's another meme.
No, Boobs on Bikes.
Right.
I wonder if he was drunk when he did that over in England. They didn't cover it on our...
When who did what? Bob Ney?
No, when Bush fell off his bike.
When he fell off his... he's both fallen off a bike and off a Segway.
Anyhow...
Which I guess is pretty hard to do.
Yeah, well, he... Okay, I won't go there, but... Rachel, I listen to her when she does Keith's show.
Mm-hmm.
And she's excellent, and I hope that she has you on as a guest, because I don't see you on the programs that I watch.
Yeah, well, that's because I mostly do Fox News.
Fox. Oh.
Go on and argue with conservatives. But, Flo, thank you very much for your kind sentiments, and thank you for and on behalf of Rachel, thank you for your kind words for her. To the extent that I can speak for her, I'm sure that she would agree. Gus in Huntington Beach, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Gus. No, that's not Gus. I've got two Gus's on the board. I'm not sure which is which, so let me go to three. That's the other Gus. Okay, that's the right
there
Gus.
We are.
Hey, Gus.
Now I'm here.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
What's up?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Bob Ney's use of the conventional frame or meme of the hanging Chad. You know, we all accept that argument at face value. If you actually look into that, the only reason that the hanging Chads were a problem was the lack of maintenance on the machines. As far as Ney goes now, I guess I'm not allowed to talk about him, but...
I think you are.
Okay. Now, you made the statement that his persecution was similar to Siegelman. I have full sympathy with Siegelman. I have no sympathy for Ney. He's got a big staff. He was linked up with Abramoff. I think he's just trying to pull a
yep.
public relations coup. As far as a lot of the congressmen, they have huge staffs, and when they come on your show and get interviewed, they sound like they're less informed than the average person that listens to your show.
Well, actually, they come on my show very rarely because I typically don't put big-name politicians on the program. In fact, the only politician of any consequence who ever comes on the show is Bernie.
Bernie, the
exception is that Bernie will take calls from listeners, and that's pretty much my criteria for, you know, if some big name politician wants to come on, he's not going to get a suck up interview here, and if he's going to be on for any period of time, he's going to have to take calls, and for that reason, most of them say, nah, we'll go with the guys that we can pay off or that we know are going to suck up to us. So,
yeah.
But with Bob Ney, what I thought was interesting, and I'm not a defender of Bob Ney. I don't personally know him. Ellen has known him for years and likes him, and you know, who can account for friends, right? Ellen is one of those people who's been able to transcend politics. She's been a liberal all her life and really is a champion of liberal causes. And she's been friends with Bob Ney for all these years, and as was Stephanie Tubb Jones, a good friend of Bob Ney's, and among others. But his point that he's the guy that the Swiss came to, because he's the only member of Congress who speaks Farsi, which is the language they speak in Iran. And he's the guy that the Iranian, the guy out of the Swiss embassy who represents the interests of Iran, because we don't have formal relations with Iran. He's the guy that the guy came to as a point of contact within the official United States government and said Iran is ready now to recognize Israel and to allow inspectors, UN inspectors, into the nuclear power plants and the whole nuclear system. And will you please, as a Republican, convey this to George Bush, who's in your party? And he said yes, he would, and he took it to the White House, and boom, within a month of that time, and he's pushing on this thing, saying, wait a minute, you shouldn't call these guys the axis of evil. Within a month or so of that time, he's finding himself facing down the barrel of a federal prosecutor. I defy you, Gus, to find any member of Congress who doesn't have some skeleton in their closet. Not to say that Ney didn't have more than most. I mean, he's the guy who came on this show and said that he handed them the bullets. He did wrong.
Right.
But I don't think that Republicans, you know, we haven't got a long, how many, you know, look at the guy, you know, Ted Stevens up in Alaska. Look at how long it took them to prosecute him. And they're just looking at the smallest stuff. I mean, it's so clear to me.
Tom?
Yeah.
But we don't go far enough in our analysis of this. Why is this? Because corporations have personhood. We just accept it as ubiquitous that, you know, corporations have the right to flood Washington with their lobbyists, that it's a matter of course that they're politicians, you know, they're bought. We just accept it.
You know, Gus,
we don't
emphasize
this corporate personhood thing like we should.
Well, I do. I wrote an entire book on it called
Unequal
Protection.
We should emphasize it every time we talk about political corruption.
Gus, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And thanks for the call. I mean, you know, well said. Yep. Dave in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Dave, what's up?
I had a little bit of a comment about earlier we were talking to Terry from Conservative News. And the subject of the doctors who were refusing to give artificial insemination to the lesbian couple.
Right.
And I was just kind of wanting to comment in defense of those doctors that just because you don't agree with everything in the field doesn't mean you can't do some good in it. And if they want to be OBGYNs to help people who want that service, that's fine. And if they want to deny some services because they don't agree with it, that's also fine as long as it's not life-threatening. It's not like they're saying, I'm not going to give you blood, you're not going to live.
But we have laws against discrimination, Dave. You know, if an African-American walks into a clinic and with an ear infection and the doc says, you know, I really don't want to serve you because of the color of your skin, you think that's appropriate?
I'm not saying it's the same thing.
And in
I'm
particular, what if the doc said, well, because I'm a Mormon and you know, I subscribe to the old beliefs pre-1980, whatever it was, that, you know, African-Americans are descended from Cain and therefore, you know, bad.
I understand what you're saying, but I'm saying the difference between discriminating based on that and based on ethical reasons that you...
No, I'm saying that there's no difference between saying to an African-American, between a pre-1980 Mormon saying to an African-American that they wouldn't give them medical service because they believe that those folks are bad and have carried the mark of Cain is no different than today an Abjin saying to a lesbian that he won't provide her with artificial insemination because he doesn't approve of her lifestyle, his religion doesn't approve of her lifestyle. I'm saying it's the same thing, and that kind of discrimination should be illegal in professional services. People should not be afraid to go get medical services, should not be afraid that they're going to be interrogated about their personal lifestyle, and they're going to find themselves the recipient of some bigoted idiot's discriminatory practices, rather than, I mean, you know, if there's a legitimate medical reason, you know, if he had said, you know, no, I'm not going to give you artificial insemination because, you know, you've got a 1 in 3 chance of malformed birth because you've got a weird something or other, you know, then I got no problem with it. I mean, you know, this is not a medical reason. This is a religious reason. And I'm sorry, if somebody's religion is going to make them only semi-functional in their profession, they should find a different profession or find some corner of that profession, some niche within that profession where that religion doesn't matter. Gloria in Los Angeles. Hey, Gloria.
Oh, hello. I'm so glad to talk to you.
Thank you.
Listen, when after this debacle in Georgia, McCain came out and said, I am in touch with him, with the president of Georgia. At least I am calling him at least 3 times a day. I believe that whole thing was set up by Roe to get more votes for
McCain. I've been saying that from day one, and now you've got all these Republicans coming out saying, isn't this great now? Our new enemy is Russia, and John
right,
McCain knows how to deal with Russia.
I want to continue that.
Yeah, Obama,
that was his opportunity to come out and say, who is his foreign advisor?
Yeah, and Obama should have used that as a point of attack against McCain, frankly, in my humble opinion. By the way, CNN is now reporting that Stephanie Tubbs Jones is still alive, so... I guess no matter what, keep praying your prayers. 45 minutes past the hour. Sad news.
This is The Moment. Continuing live coverage from Denver of the Democratic National Convention on Air America and AirAmerica.com. Our time is now.
I've learned to be gentle and I've learned to be tough. I've found only 2 things that last till the end. One is your heroes, the other's your friends.
9.5 minutes before the hour, fighting for the common man and woman and the common good. It's Tom Hartman with you. I have to tell you about this incredible new study that just came out of Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research. Let me tell you after we take a call from Juanita. She's been on hold here for a bit in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Juanita. By the way, our number 866. Hey, Juanita, what's up?
It's 866-303-2270.
Yeah. No, I know. Something just happened here that distracted me terribly. I'm sorry, but yes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I was calling about the gentleman who called and said that he didn't need health insurance and he didn't see why he should have to carry other people in the commons and pay for their health care. And when the announcement came about Stephanie Tubbs Jones with her aneurysm, which was totally unpredictable, but is a catastrophic health event.
Right.
With catastrophic financial burdens, whether she lives or dies, this is going to cost her it's going to cost her family a lot of money.
Right.
That's what insurance is for.
So we don't get wiped out by these things.
Wiped out by these things. And so this gentleman
who doesn't want to pay, who only wants to pay his way, is depriving the commons of the shared risk.
Right.
And
if he were to have a brain aneurysm, you and I would be paying for it because he'd show up in a hospital ER.
Yeah. Anyway, I work in healthcare, and I know what happens when you don't have the money to pay for healthcare. And it's not nice. It's
2270, our telephone number, and that time I was not distracted. Apparently, you know, CNN is like going back and forth and back and forth on this thing. No, not that she's dead, but, you know, that she was taken off life support, but now she's still alive. I don't know what's going on with Stephanie Tubbs Jones, and we all, and this is very disconcerting. She really is, or was, we'll see, one of the just very finest members of Congress. Anyhow, this new survey that I want to tell you about, and then we'll get back to your calls at 866-303-2270. This new survey released today, as both Democrats and Republicans prepare for their new political conventions, it's about patriotism. And this company was commissioned by this group, the True Patriot Network. I don't know who they are or what they're all about. Found probably a right-wing group, because the study, apparently the way it was organized, found that people perceive McCain as being more patriotic than Obama. But Obama actually wins a hypothetical patriotism-centered debate with McCain if he frames his agenda, and I'm hearing myself in my own headphones here, Chris, if he frames his agenda with a narrative of patriotism centered on progressive values. And the key findings, this is fascinating, 76% of respondents believe that political leaders invoke patriotism in a cheap and empty way. The single most negative thing Americans feel about patriotism is that politicians often exploit it to manipulate the public. And by a 20-point margin, 58 to 38%, respondents believe patriotism should be more about actively improving America than simply honoring its past. This is amazing stuff. Chris, somehow you're feeding back to me my own. I'm getting it back at about a half-second delay, and it's making me crazy. Thank you. 866-303-2270, your telephone number. Linda in South Florida on WINS. Hey, Linda, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I enjoy your show. I listen to you every day. And,
thank you.
I just want to say something for the gentleman that I'm hoping he's still listening to you.
Yes, Chris.
That my mother, she died a couple months ago, and she had the General Motors, I mean, the platinum insurance. It was, mm-hmm. It's like the best. You can't even get it anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, and for 45 minutes, my mother died a very quick death. She was in the hospital. 45 minutes later, she had a bill of $30,000 that General Motors paid.
Right.
Now, that gentleman, I don't know if he knows it, but it's unions that got my mother those benefits that they tried to save her. $30,000 her bill came to that we don't have to pay for.
Yep. I mean, my father, you know, worked 40 years in a union shop in Lansing, Michigan, a metal machining company, tool and die shop. And he had a couple of strokes and several heart attacks and ended up dying of cancer. He had mesothelioma, which was he got from exposure to asbestos when I was born. When I was born, my dad dropped out of college and went to work in a steel mill in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And, you know, it finally killed him. And the bills for all of those things, when you add them all together, would have just been devastating to the family. But instead, because dad worked in a union shop, when he died, his house was fully paid off. He had a pension. He had full health insurance. There were no expenses that were left to my mother. She's still alive, and she's still getting his pension. She's getting Social Security, and you know, she still has the house. So it's like this is not that. That was then, and there's echoes of it. But you know, now it's a very different economic reality after 30 years of Reagan's war on the middle class. It's a very different.
You know what my mother got after her death? She got a letter in the mail, because I'm handling her estate, that says she no longer has those benefits. General Motors has done away with them.
Yeah. Well, and it's not because, you know, GM is the nasty company. It's because that's just the direction the entire country has gone. I mean, it's just
yep.
Everybody. Thank you very much for the call. Everybody right across the board. Companies just can't survive in the post-Reagan era any longer. Well, they can, but, you know, it's a tough one. And anyhow, tomorrow, Benjamin Day, executive director of MassCare, is going to tell us how single-payer health care is working or not working in Massachusetts. That should be entertaining. And Thomas Frank is going to be with us on his latest book, The Wrecking Crew, How Conservatives Rule, or Maybe It Should Be Misrule. And, of course, the best of the rest of the news right here on the Tom Hartman Program. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. Get out there. Get active. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.